Well, our moms think we're funny.
All right, hey everybody, it's Akomi with Our Moms Think We're Funny, back at you again. So, yeah, still haven't heard anything out of Turk lately. That's, yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure we'll find something we can do with the podcast this go around, maybe read some Sonichu or something. So, yeah. The Akomi! Turk, what are you doing here?
It's my podcast, too! You left me to die, you son of a bitch!
I thought you were dead, Turk. Thank God you're okay!
I should have been dead! I need water.
I thought you had plenty of water. I thought you were, like, on international waters or something.
You can't drink salt water! I learned that from Homer Simpson!
Oh.
Water everywhere, so let's all have a drink. That's not real!
Did you have a good time on your trip?
I'm missing part of my thumb and all of my toes. No, I didn't have fun on my trip.
Oh, yeah, you see, I didn't see your toes, but I kept your thumb. So here you go.
You didn't put it on ice.
Well, no, I just wanted it, like, here on the table. So
it looks like a shriveled up monkey dick. I'm not putting that back on my hand.
No, just a little bit of super glue, a little bit of duct tape. You know, it's all good. It's all good.
I was being held hostage by Somali pirates. But not good Somali pirates. They were white. They didn't realize that black people don't make good hostages.
That's weird.
I think they were Somali pirates. I don't know. They just tortured me. And maybe do things
like vacation things, fun vacation things.
Yes, that's why I'm so happy to be back, because they made me do fun vacation things.
Well, yeah, you know, it's always, they always say you need a vacation from the vacation, right?
You go to hell. You go to hell and you die.
Do you like all the reorganization I brought to the office here?
All my pictures are gone. I just see pictures of you everywhere.
I mean, yeah. You know, I thought I'd, you know, kind of liven up the room a little bit.
Is that a Tommy Kincaid portrait of you?
Well, you know, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've kind of come around on his artwork. I like the light hitting me from every angle. Makes me look a little angelic, you know.
I like to hit you from every angle and turn you into an angel.
Are you an angel? No, okay. Well, I mean, I'm glad you're back, man. I thought you were just gonna, like, kind of.
You didn't help me. I kept saying help.
Oh, you were serious?
Didn't you get that guy's messages, that Eider guy?
I mean,
the main hostage guy, Danchen Eider. Didn't you get his messages?
I mean, yes, and he did ask about a ransom, but it was criminally low, Turk.
You sent back a message that I ran some, but then I walked the rest of the way. What the fuck was that?
I mean, I didn't want to insult you by implying that you were only worth, like, $3,000, you know?
You talked him down to $3,000!
No, you're definitely worth more than that. You're definitely worth more than that. But, I mean, like, you know, you're always on my case about, like, not spending company funds on frivolous shit.
Hookers and cereal is frivolous shit.
Well, yeah, but, like, you remember when I got the VW minibus, and it was gonna be, like, the Corova Entertainment bang bus, and, you know, you were on me about that. That would have been a good investment. But, you know, I just...
No. I said we should paint it and make it look like the turtle wagon, and you disagreed. You said no women are gonna want to fuck us in the turtle wagon.
Well, yeah, I mean... I mean, the Ninja Turtles don't have sex, dude.
You spent 10 grand on Flintstones crypto, and then you tried to cash out. The guy said, they didn't have crypto back in the caveman days and then stole all your money.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Elon Musk said that was promising. He said Yabba Dabba Doo coin was going to reach over a dollar per coin. It was just a matter of time. I think we just, like, you know, chickened out too soon. That's why I say you lose money with crypto, Turk. But besides that, I mean, like, with that $10,000 investment, it's not like I could really afford a $3,000 ransom.
What have you spent your money on since I've been gone?
Well, I've got this Q-Bert arcade cabinet here. I kind of had to sell some of your figures to make room for it, so...
How much did that cost?
That was... $2,000.
Aren't you the same person that told me that you didn't like Q-Bert, and you couldn't play Q-Bert, and you hated Q-Bert, and you hated it even more after watching Pixels?
I mean, yeah, it was kind of an impulse buy, and I did experience some buyer's remorse, but it looks so good there in that corner.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
Where the hell's that water?
Oh, yeah, here. I already kind of took a sip out of that. It's okay.
You wouldn't be a comey if you hadn't.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta make sure it's, you know, not poison for you.
Scoot over, I'm taking my seat back.
I mean, I'm kind of spread out comfortable here, you know? I've gotten kind of used to, like, sort of taking up my space, you know?
Yes, taking up all my space.
I mean, well, our space, but... All right, yeah, pull up a seat. I've been handling the podcast and a couple of Let's Watches and stuff, so it's all good. It's all good.
You called and told my parents that I hated them.
Well, you know, I kind of got that vibe. You know, just sort of got that impression. So, yeah, I figured, you know, if you're going to be taking an extended vacation out in Somalia, that, you know, maybe you kind of want me to, you know, handle things for you.
I'm sorry, where am I again?
You are on Our Moms Think We're Funny. Well, welcome back, Turk. Welcome back.
I'm going to tell you right now, if I watch that hostage video and I translate it and it turns out to be an Iron Man thing, I'm going to kick your ass.
That was a real hostage video?
No, it was fake. They were just like cutting my fingers off the air and I'm screaming while they're holding a newspaper from that today.
I thought it was AI, man. I thought it was a deepfake.
No, deepfake was the guy that raped me every night. Let me tell you, it wasn't fake.
That is a good name for that.
that's what breaks you right there. Is deepfake the rapist? That's what breaks you? Yeah. Like, oh.
Yeah, that was solid. That was solid.
Thank you. Wow. Okay.
So, yes, welcome back, Turk. It is so good to have you. Like, all bits aside, you've been sorely missed.
I have missed doing this. I mean, all things being equal, I'd rather be in Cleveland. But, you know.
I mean, that's probably better than Somalia.
Yeah. I mean, and for people that don't get that, go back and listen to our episode, Famous Last Words.
Oh, yeah.
So, no. But I'm so glad to be back to doing this. I have missed, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I listened to, like, all of your podcasts that you did, you know, when I was unavailable.
Yeah.
And I was so happy to just know that you were still carrying on the show and keeping things current, getting episodes out, you know, roughly on time, and that
and that the episodes really weren't that good, because I was so afraid that you were going to be better without me, and I was going to be, shit, now he's not going to want me back. I mean, but then I was to come on, I was like, these are horrible. Like, yo, he needs me so much.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not going to lie, I don't think I recorded a single episode completely sober. I was always two or three shots in before I even hit the record button.
No, I'm joking. Your episodes are not horrible. I mean, if we go back to it, like...
The audio quality is.
No, so if we go back to it, I mean, you were doing this, like, before, you know... Well, you're doing the Let's Plays.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and those, your early Let's Plays are... Wait for it. Amazing!
Oh, so, thank you. Thank you.
So, yep. But I'm so happy to be back. Being back doing this, is like... As we talked about before on podcasts, like, this is, like, one of the things that, like, keeps me going. Like, our recording weekends is, like, my birthday every month. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought of recording time as just, like, kind of a getaway, kind of a vacation. I mean, I know we work, but it's just, like, it's nice to get away from the daily grind and just kind of focus on what I deem to be sort of a worthwhile endeavor. So.
I have, I don't think you talked about this already, but because of, me being kind of, not available for a lot of things recently, I ended up missing the one con that you went instead and took, took a friend, and, you have...
Just wasn't the same, man.
He tried to make one at home, it just wasn't the same. But you have, you have a couple stories, but you have two amazing stories I'd love for you to tell.
Okay.
The Patrick Warburton story and the Brent Spiner story.
All right, yeah. So let me get a sip of my energy drink here.
That's what he calls my dick.
So yes, Patrick Warburton, he was the big draw for me for the con. And because Turk couldn't make it, and Turk, kind of hooked us up with the tickets and whatnot, I was like, yeah, I definitely got to meet Warburton for starters, but I gotta give Turk a little special gift. So, we went through the line, I approached the handler, I was like, do you have any good pictures of Warburton as Putty? They didn't. They had, like, one picture of him from, like, the face paint episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that doesn't fit with what I want him to write for Turk. So I found a nice little headshot of him as the Tick with, like, the perfect facial expression.
Yes.
And so I explained to them what I wanted them to write down, and they just kind of looked at me, and I was like, it's a long story. And they kind of nodded, and so I got up to Warburton's table, and he looks super different now. He looks more like Tom Selleck than he does than Warburton. He's got, like, the mustache and all that. He's still got some muscle, but he's not as, like, totally hinged as he was back in the day.
Well, and knowing you were going to try to meet him,
mm-hmm.
And all that, and I, of course, not being there, it's a lot different. He's like, oh, pass this along, but, you know, at the moment, it completely slipped my mind that he was on the, he had some appearances in the last season of, Designing Women.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, so that would have been cool to mention to him because, that was like the first thing I ever saw him in.
Well, funny thing about this story is that I have this, like, unique ability to completely derail conversations with celebrities. And, I've told the Ralph Macchio story with great fondness many, many times. Right. Like, he probably doesn't remember me now, but I think if he ever saw me, he would absolutely remember that painfully awkward conversation.
Potential.
You haven't watched that movie. I've never watched that movie. It's like, Ralph, you started it. but yeah, so the line I was having Patrick Warburton write down was, it's just me, my mommy, my daddy, and me, which is definitely a running joke on this podcast. So, of course, Warburton, like, looks at it, he's like, what's this mean? So I was like, it's a really long story, and he just kind of nodded. I was like, so I co-host a podcast. I was like, we're both huge fans of yours, we love your work, and we make a lot of jokes about Chris Hansen's To Catch a Predator, and he kind of started catching on and nodding, and I was like, and the worst decoy that Chris Hansen ever had said that to a predator. He said, oh, I just live here, it's just me, my mommy, my daddy, and me. And I was like, and one of our recording sessions, my co-host thought it would be amazing to hear that in your voice. And on God, this wonderful sainted man stands up from the table and he goes, that's just me, my mommy, my daddy, and me. And I was like, oh my God, he said it! So it was everything I could have ever possibly wanted. He had the biggest smile on his face when he said it. It was fan-fucking-tastic.
That's so good. When you told me that story, and I was just like, and just the fact that he just did it, like, you didn't even prompt him really to do that.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, obviously that's what I wanted to happen, but like, it's not like I said, could you do it? He just did it. He knew what I was angling for. It's like a date that went really well, you know? It's like, you don't have to ask for the sex, it just kind of happens naturally. It was that kind of thing.
It's just funny. It makes me think of the scene from Venture Brothers, when he has to take the test again to become a bodyguard because he his license expire or something like that. And so he's taking a written test, and the guy says, like, under this part right here, there's a question, like, you just drew a picture of the cover of Led Zeppelin album. And he goes, with the guy on the cover, like, he's like, yeah, Icarus.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, one of the big draws for the con, well, for Camelot, which everybody's heard Camelot's name for as long as we've been doing the podcast. So Camelot came along since Turk was...
In the family way.
So Camelot had two very big draws for wanting to attend the con. Of course, Peter Cullen. He needed to get his Optimus signed. Mm. And he also really wanted to meet Brent Spiner, because... on a previous convention trip, Turk and I got his Enterprise signed by Shatner, and well, that was a pretty fun experience.
That sounds really dirty. You got his Enterprise signed by Shatner.
Yeah, I'd let Shatner sign my Enterprise. You know, that particular con was our first venture into cosplay, and we were dressed as the Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
and got some pretty decent feedback on that, but that was great because Shatner looked at us and he went, look at you. You're dressed as the Doobie Brothers. So, yeah, that was great. That made me really happy.
And then I looked at the call me, I was like, rerun, how could you? No.
but yeah, so as I was going around collecting some signatures for Turk, because Turk couldn't make it on his own, he said, you know, here's a list of people I need signatures from.
Yeah, you're not supposed to fly when you're pregnant.
So I was like, yeah, man, I got you. So I was doing that. Camelot went and got his signature from Cullen. And at that point, we reconnected, and it was like, okay, well, you know, we'll both go talk to Brent Spiner.
Who's also on my list as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because... Was it the Night Court poster?
Yep.
Right? Haha. I remembered. See, I do care.
Yeah. I mean, Night Court, because, you know, like, everyone knows I'm a big Night Court fan, and his character, I mean, of course, he was actually reprising his character in the new Night Court series.
Hmm.
And, you know, once he kind of became Brent Spiner, you know, kind of everybody, like, kind of knows his character now, but, like, I remember, like, the different appearances his character made throughout the series,
right.
Bob and June Wheeler, and then, like, the, you know, there's a whole story, too, which he actually tells in, like, an interview at a con when he was talking to somebody, because he was, like, in the history of Night Court, in the cafeteria, they have a newsstand.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the newsstand has been owned by several different people. There was an older guy that owned it, kind of a little pudgy guy. And he used to always flirt with Selma, and then he ended up selling it. And then the blind guy bought it, and then apparently he was going to sell it to Bob and June because they had this life insurance money from when grandmother died, and there's a whole thing with that and the whole up, up, up it went, which is just.
Oh, just yeah. That's one of my favorite bits.
Hey, I love that. And they were supposed to, they were going to become regulars in the show running the, because they actually bought it and they raised the price, and because, to compensate for it, they changed, like, it was like a candy bar is like $100 and like Bull's like eating his Snickers. He's like, just taking his little bites and he's like, I gotta make it last. And so, yeah. But then he ended up getting, the role of Data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, cause I think that was, when he was supposed to come back, I think after like the next season or whatever, right. He got the role of Data and then said he wasn't going to come back, you know, obviously cause he had a part of the show. And kind of left the woman that played the wife, June, didn't leave her hanging in a bad way, but it was like, I've got a part in this other series, and, you know, so I'm going to do that.
Sure.
So then they couldn't have her
without
him, right? Yeah. So it just kind of killed that whole thing there. But yeah, that you know, the whole thing, like... You know, when they first showed up at the courtroom and stuff, and, you know, he told Judge Stone that they were from, West Virginia, and then actually turns out they were from Yugoslavia, and, and he was like, well, why'd you say you were from West Virginia? It's like, it was the most exotic place I could think of. I being loving Night Court and everything, and then they were show up, so yeah, he's on my list, and then of course you have the Night Court poster and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I did see him once, and I wanted to go talk to him, but this was when I was San Diego. So the only time I went to San Diego,
yeah.
And he was sitting at a table, and he and Marina Sirtis were sharing a table, and she looked like she was having the most miserable time. Like I was going to go over there, but I looked at her, I was like. Like, holy shit, she does not look like she wants to be bothered by anybody. And plus, I mean, San Diego's one of those things. It's so overwhelming there. Like, just everything, just visually, physically.
Yeah.
And it's, it's kind of like a bit of a sensory overload. And, cause you're like, I don't, like, I want to see everything. And so you like, I'll come back to this. And,
yep.
I mean, hell, I got to see Lucy Liu from a distance. Oh. I mean, yeah, it was like 30, 50 feet. Cause there were a bunch of people in the way too. So, but I was like, holy shit, that's Lucy Liu. Like,
want to touch the Heidi?
Yeah. 30, 50 feet's plenty for me.
Yeah.
That's good enough for me to nut.
And, unfortunately, I got to be kind of up close. I didn't get to sign anything, but I'd be, you know, up close with someone who's not really as special now as they were at the time, but Ron Jeremy.
Oh, yeah.
Cause he was there signing some stuff. He was, I think he was like right next to Lloyd Kaufman. And I was like, wow, I haven't got a picture of him. And of course, like passed right by Biz Markie, and I was going to go back and like get in line because he was doing this whole thing for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah.
And end up missing out on that because it's like, there's so much shit. When you, like, if you don't like take advantage of the thing right at that moment, mm-hmm. when you kind of try to come back to it, it's like, where the hell is it? You know, so.
Right.
But yeah, so like just kind of like just being there and just being overwhelmed by a bunch of stuff and everything. It's like, wow, it's just.
If I were going to get Ron Jeremy to sign anything, the problem is what I want a signature from him on doesn't exist. It's Lost Media.
Lost Media?
Yeah.
Is that the name of it?
It's Super Hornio Brothers.
Oh.
He was Mario in a porno, but Nintendo destroyed it.
So you'd have to find a bootleg. I mean, you'd have to get like a download of it, which is not the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, I get that.
So yeah, if it even exists, which I don't know, I'm not even sure if it does. I think there's only stills. I think Nintendo has completely put the lid on it. But it's like that. That's what I would want a signature from him on.
Oh no! Now I feel like I've been challenged. Like normally you can find all kinds of shit there. So now I'm like, I'm pretty sure I can find a cup, but it doesn't really matter.
To be fair, I haven't like really sought that out super hard.
Obscure porn, you say? Now I'm stroking my beard like Pai Mei.
I don't know. It's just like, it's never been super high on my priority list, but it's like, okay, here we go. Porn time. It's like, I really just want to see Ron Jeremy go, woohoo, let's go.
So, but yeah, so Brent Spiner,
yeah.
Yeah, so Camelot really wanted to get his Enterprise signed by Spiner, and, so we went, and there was not really a line for him. I was like, okay, that's a bit unusual. So, we get up to the table, Camelot hands it to him, he's like, yeah, if you just wanna sign anywhere on the saucer, and he goes, okay, and he just, like, signs the bridge. And Camelot's like, yeah, that's fine, too. And, so, Camelot's, like, you know, he really admires the dude. He's trying to, like, have conversation with him. He's like, yeah, your signature's really nice and legible. Shatner's is just kind of a scribble, and he nods, and doxed him. And so Camelot's like,
Yeah, and you're not going to edit this.
Not at all. Oh no, they're going to find him via the most common first name in all of history.
Well, they just got to find you.
Oh, they'll never find me. I've only doxed myself like 86 times on this podcast.
And it's like, we have your address. We'll just go to your house. Oh yeah? Well, I'm going to take the numbers off my house. Then we'll just look for the house and make the house with no numbers on it. Oh yeah, well, I'm taking my name and numbers off my neighbor's house too.
But yeah, so Camelot's, like, yeah, I mean, Peter Cullen's signature's nice and legible too, and Spiner goes, I've seen people at his line all day, what was he in? And it was like Camelot had been flashbanged, like, he couldn't process the people would not know Peter Cullen, so he's like, he was Optimus Prime, and Spiner goes, I don't know what that is.
You have to imagine, they've been at tons of cons together, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, their tables were, like 50 feet away from each other, so, like...
And, you know, in most cons, they've got, like, a big banner overhead that has their face and then, like, pictures of what they've done.
Oh, yeah, it's, like, all the pictures of Optimus Prime all around him. Yeah, like, this entire interaction had to be him fucking with him.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like it. That's what would you tell it? That just so, it was so fun. Like, just the idea of, like, Brent Spiner's like, okay, I'm gonna have some fun with this guy, because, like, why not, right?
Like, the first guy to come to my table in ages, we're just gonna completely ruin his experience. Which Camelot was very happy with this whole thing. He was ecstatic that Brent Spiner just fucked around with him for all this time.
Oh shit. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but
yeah, you're good.
I meant to tell you this a while back and I completely forgot. Because we're talking about Star Trek, so this connected to the other thing, because mm-hmm. Star Trek mm-hmm. stuff and Night Court. Episode of Always Sunny. And I'm trying to think which one it was. There was a black guy on it, and he was kind of heavy set, and he had something to do with D. I can't remember what it was now. What the episode was? And
was he the stand up comedian?
No. Wasn't that guy? That,
Landslide or Mudslide or whatever.
Yeah, no, it wasn't him. This guy was in a suit, and he was doing something. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but I remember he wasn't a lawyer, I don't think, but it was something anyway. Yeah, and I think I may have texted you at the time that saw it. But anyway, it was the guy that played Kincaid in Nightmare on Street 3.
Okay.
He was heavier in Sunny. And the reason that kind of all came about was in my head is because he also was in an episode of Night Court when these two groups of Star Trek fans get in trouble at a Star Trek con, and they're fighting over which series is better, who's the better captain, like Picard or Shatner.
Yeah.
And then the guy that's like leading the Next Generation group, he's dressed like Geordi, and he's got the visor on. And like, you know, Judge Stone's like, whatever, like $50 in time served. And he's like, and it's like, you have no authority over me. He goes, I won't be judged by you. Like, you're judged by a higher power. And he pushes his communicator and he's like, you know, like, beam us up. And then they all beam up. And
yeah,
that was Kincaid, too.
Nice.
So, see, I brought it back around.
Yo.
Right, so please, get back to Brent Spiner. Brent Spiner, excuse me.
Yeah. So Camelot's like, it's Optimus Prime from Transformers. And Spiner's like, I've heard of those. Are they any good? And so Camelot's just, like, trying to process how to, like, navigate this conversation. He's like, well, the Michael Bay movies aren't good, but, like, the original cartoons are pretty good. So I don't even fully remember how that initial conversation ended, but, you know, we went and, you know, walked the floor a little bit more. I picked up a couple of graphic novels. We went and got some Dippin' Dots, at which point it was like, okay, well, you know, we're pretty much caught up. We've got all the signatures we need. We've met the people who we really want to meet. You know, what next? And Camelot was like, I kind of want to go talk to Spiner again if there's no line.
Glutton for punishment.
Yeah, I was like, all right, man, we can do that. I'm pretty satisfied with the day. So we went back to Spiner's table. Again, there was no line. And Camelot was like, why is there no line? I was like, I'm assuming because he's been in enough of these, pretty much everybody else has a signature except you. So we went back up to the table, and Camelot, with his half-eaten Dippin' Dots, is like, I brought you some Dippin' Dots, and Spiner just looks at him like he threw up on his shoes.
Wait, I gotta ask about this. So he just went up to him, and just like, while eating from the yeah. the little bowl of Dippin' Dots, just like, hey, I brought you some Dippin' Dots.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's fantastic.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So Camelot was doing a little bit of trolling himself. So, I'm guessing that he thought that it would kick off a very funny conversation, and damn if it didn't. So Spiner just looked horrified, and he was like, after you've already been eating from it? And Camelot was like, it's okay, my mouth is very clean, and he goes, and Spiner goes, what even is that? Is that food for children? Did you bring me food for children? Camelot says, well, it's colored like breakfast cereals, but it's not strictly for children. And Spiner says, is it a cereal? And Camelot's like, no. He's like, well, is it a candy? And Camelot's like, no, it's kind of a really hard-packed ice cream. And he goes, exactly, it's food for children. And Camelot's like, well, you should get your assistant to go get you some. It's delicious. You'd probably really like it. And Spiner says, I would never have my lovely assistant waste time getting me food for children. He was just bearing down on this.
Oh, I love it, man.
Oh, so Camelot had a few questions for him. I think one question was about, like, the altered contacts and what they were like back then, because it was, you know, there was a certain point where it was different than what we do now with altered contacts.
I remember when Michael Jackson did Thriller, and, like, the contacts he used to do his eyes there, they took up, like, almost his entire eyeball. It was like cutting a ping pong ball in half, and like, okay, yeah, now we're going to put this in your eye.
Yeah, and so, like, Camelot asked him about that, and Spiner was like, it was 30 years ago, I don't remember! And Camelot was like, well, if it was the old way of contacts, you would remember, that would be really, really painful. He was like, when you're wearing contacts for a 10-hour shooting day, they're all gonna be uncomfortable! And so then I think Camelot asked him about Geordi's headset, and he was like, did you guys have a betting pool to see how many times Geordi would trip and fall over stuff? And Spiner was like, we didn't keep track. So that was my chance to jump in. I was like, well, is it that you, like, didn't bother to count, or is it that it happened so much that you just lost count? And he was like, yeah. The second one. And finally, Camelot was like, okay, final question. Was Wesley as annoying for you guys to deal with as he was to all the people watching him? And Spiner smiled for the first time and said, only in real life. Which was the perfect, perfect answer.
Now, that was the only thing that when you told me a story, that kind of made me, like, be like, hmm? And only because, you know, listening to Will Wheaton like talk about that, and it was like, he, you know, I know he had, there was some issues with, like, him, like, being on the set and, like, I guess trying to be friends with them and kind of show like, oh, hey, you know, I'm an actor too, and I'm a part of this thing, but also, like, he didn't, like, as he says, like, he never really wanted to be an actor. Like, this is what he wanted to do.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's what he was kind of pushed into doing and all that kind of stuff, and just couldn't really kind of break away from it. And that was kind of like, they were not really his family so much, but like, he was more comfortable with them and then, you know, doing what he was doing. It was just, you know, I can't really say I feel for the guy because I don't really know him that well. I don't know him at all, but, you know, so I can't say that, you know, I feel so bad for him. Like, he had it rough, and I know some people are like, yeah, but look at all the money he made. Yeah, but, like, shit, babe, you can make a lot of money doing being miserable. I mean, yeah, so.
But I mean, it's better than our situation where it's like we're making no money and we're miserable. So, you know,
exactly.
count your blessings, Will.
I was like, well, I mean,
count your other blessings. You could have like kicked off your acting career at Nickelodeon.
Yeah, true.
Just going to toss that out there.
Well, I mean, I was going to say also, you know, if we had the opportunity to be like, well, we can make you happy, still not going to make any money. But it's like, and your other option, but I was gonna say, you know, he could. I mean, he could have the Nickelodeon thing, but also, I mean, like, shit. From, you know, I mean, if you look at the Coreys, like, shit, you didn't have to be on Nickelodeon. Just, you know, the fact that you were even in Hollywood was enough to just, you know, derail your childhood.
Oh, totally.
And I was watching this, it was a Watch Mojo thing, and they were talking about, like, the 10 things that, you know, like, it's happening. They were billing it as those 10 things from the whole, you know, dark side of, you know, the thing, documentary thing. But they're really talking about, just child actors in general. But, one of the things that one of the actors, had said about just being a child actor was that they being on the set so much and being, you know, basically surrounded by adults and, you know, being tutored and that kind of stuff. Like, they lost touch with what it was like to be a real person and to be around, you know, kids and, you know, and actually be a kid. Like, they were completely cut off from that whole experience. And they're like, yeah, there's like, that was foreign to them. They didn't know, you know, how to do that. It was just gone. It was like, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that kind of happened to me and I didn't get paid for it. So, you know, not that I'm bitter.
Yeah, but think about it, man. Nobody, well, at least not that I know of, knows more about cults than you, huh?
That is very true.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, you know.
Yep, I've certainly learned my fair share about cults and about predators.
So, I mean, hey, that's something.
It is something.
Yeah, it's something.
I would certainly have liked to have gotten a SAG card out of it, but, you know.
Only SAG you can get around here are these nuts. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's. I feel for them, and I think I told you, maybe not. I was having a conversation with somebody else, but you know, you and I have these different conversations back and forth off mic. But I saw this interview with Ethan Hawke when he was doing when the Moon Knight series was coming out, and he was talking about that and. You're talking about him, you know, being in that movie, Black Mask and, you know, that and, you know, growing up as a child actor and, you know, and then I think they mentioned like River Phoenix and stuff. And he was like, yeah, he was lucky that he, you know, made it through all of that. And, you know, and, you know, had some, you know, there were some times and stuff. And he was like, you know, and he said like, you know, no child should be an actor. He's like, no child should be a child actor. Like, it's not a good environment for them. And then I saw something not too long ago, and Mark Paul Gosselaar was in there, and they were interviewing him, and they asked him about his children going to acting. He's like, no, I won't let them. He goes, I won't let them
I don't blame
become, you know, actors, child actors, like, no, that's not a, that's not something I want for them, and I won't let them do it. And I was like, you know, that's damn sad that almost everybody that, you know, started off as a child actor is saying that, nope, I don't believe in child actors, and they shouldn't be, they wouldn't let their kids become child actors. Like, it's such a horrible, like, environment, but you have to have child actors. You have to have shows, not animated shows, that are aimed at children, you know, that, or, you know, teenage or preteens, whatever, with them in it, that resonates with them, you know, not just so you can, like, teach them lessons, you know, but so they can grow up as, you know, normal members of society, you know, they can't just sit around and just watching, like, adult shows all the time. That's not going to help them.
Sure.
But you can't have TV that's just nothing, just only for adults. So, like, sorry, there's no TV programs for you to watch until you make it to a certain age. You know, it's like,
yeah, yeah.
But you've got a community or this business that is so polluted.
Yeah.
And so toxic. See,
I was going to say that they could just, like, have adults in child roles. Like, yo, I'm Jeff. I'm 10 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of did that with Steve from Blue's Clues, but no, like, that's honestly not the answer. It's a systemic problem. Like,
just me, my mommy, my daddy, and me. Right, that'd be the name of the TV show. Me, my mommy, my daddy, and me. Oh, they'd be twins.
Yeah.
That's how the title works. Yeah. But so for them, even people that have not really said that they had anything bad happen to them, because it's always about, you know, being like abused on set. I think it's also just about the, you know, the long hours, because, you know, there are labor laws that say that, you know, kids aren't supposed to work that. But
right.
If I'm a director and I'm on the clock and I've got to get certain scenes shot by a certain time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I may turn the dial back on the clock a little bit to get a couple extra hours out of you. Otherwise, I'm going to have a producer crawling up my ass and everything about why we're, you know, like, you know, a day or two, like, you know, like over budget or, you know, or past the shooting table. So, you know, and you can't be like, well, you know, the kids, like, no. So yeah, I might have to do that.
You know, the solution to that is you like film like right up against where the time zone changes.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then you just step, like, over it.
Yeah, you just like kind of jump the border into central time. It's like, yo,
yeah,
we got another hour of film time. Follow me for more hot tips on filmmaking.
Smash that like button. But so, you know, and then of course you don't have anybody, because everybody that's around them that is supposed to take care of them and stuff, they're all adults. And,
mm-hmm.
And you know, and of course, what do I want to do as like a 26-year-old adult who is in working in the film industry to try to get my, you know, to try to be seen enough to be able to get myself into an actual movie role,
right,
as opposed
right.
to, like, you know, being a babysitter for kids. So am I really going to take my job as this kid's babysitter seriously when I'm like, I'm 28 and I'm like playing nursemaid to some 12-year-old that thinks of their shit because they're on TV and they make like five times as much as I do.
Yeah.
And only has to work like half as much as I do. But like, no, I'm not going to take this job that seriously. But like, fuck this. You know, I'm not going to, you know, be the bitch of some little fuck. You know, so, you know, so they don't have like the best hands in the world, people that actually care about them. And some of them don't have like either parents that are willing to defend them, because they're like, well, I don't want to listen, you know, miss out on be the cause for them to like end up missing out on a role or doing whatever it is.
Right,
and it'd
right.
be my fault. But at the same time, even though I'm not trying to exploit my kid, I get a little bit of this hours too. But the fact that, oh, that's my kid up there. You know, my Dun & Bradstreet goes up a little bit. I got some bragging rights and put that on the back of my car. It's like, my kid was nominated for an Academy Award. You know, so.
I also think there's plenty of stories of child stars whose parents did just take all the money.
Yeah.
Or you get shit like the Britney Spears situation where it's like, oh no, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I should oversee all of your affairs. I mean, it's like, I mean, there's plenty of times where it is just that the parents are extremely mercenary.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I'm not cute enough to get by on camera. But Ryan here, you should hear him talk about toys.
Right, exactly.
This little fucker's gonna make me billions.
And of course, you know, like, it's, you know, they're never, like, stealing the kid's money, right? They ask the kid all the time, like, hey, wouldn't you like to have a big house to live in so you can just run around all these rooms? Don't you think we should have a really big TV right here? You know, it's like, shouldn't mommy drive you around in a really fancy car? Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. You shouldn't, you know how daddy gets when he doesn't have his Coke? You know, like, I'm just saying, and then the kid's like, okay. And the next thing Oops. You know, like, they've used all their money to buy shit that's not in their name.
Yeah.
And like, now you broke, you know.
But it's also just like, especially when you're dealing with like a 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, that's a really easy age to manipulate. Because it's like, we can go to the dollar store and I'll let you buy 20 toys if you let mommy buy a new car.
Exactly. I mean, because a kid, like, I don't give a shit about your car, but 20 toys.
Yeah, like, it's a total false equivalency. So it's like,
do the math, damn it. Right. You got one car, I got 20 toys.
Mom got gypped.
You got played, sucker. And she runs over all your toys in her car. We're like, who got played now, you little bitch?
So, yeah, it's just, it's some bullshit. It's some bullshit.
You know, if you bought mommy a vineyard, I wouldn't have to get so much wine at the store.
That's logic. Mommy's talking logic.
But yeah, it's sad. And, you know, these kids just get taken advantage of like that. And then it's like, well, you know, and of course, you know, some people make it out of there. But often a lot of them are like, they hit that point and it's like, uh-oh. Who's at the door? Why, it's old man puberty. Yep. Now you're no longer cute. Ah, you don't have that nice squeaky voice anymore. What's going on?
Now you gotta get by on actual talents.
It's like, uh-oh. It's like, good thing I got all that money set aside for me to go to college on. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I feel for him. But, I mean, but like I said, you have to, I feel that you have to have child actors. You have to have children to be able to provide entertainment for children in a relatable way. And you can't do that with a bunch of, like, either grown men and women on their knees or a bunch of little people. Like, that's even more demeaning.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't see how you could get by without child actors. I just think, like, systemically, there should be rules in place to protect these kids. Mm-hmm. Like, it should just be, I don't know that it could necessarily be, like, a law as far as the legal system goes, but it should be, like, a policy that is, like, no one-on-one time between an adult and a child. Like, that's just, like, common sense rules to live by. And it's like, there's no reason for the producer to be alone in the room with this kid. That would alleviate a lot of issues.
So I just got to interrupt you real quick here, just because I'm looking at this thing. And you see this movie that's on here as I'm just scrolling through here. Red Surf, 1989, with George Clooney, young George Clooney, back when he had longer hair. Is he the third person from, like I said, the second person from the right?
Yeah.
Look at the eyes, the nose, and the hair.
Uh-huh.
Who's that look like to you?
I couldn't tell you.
Because I can't see the mouth, I'm not sure. I swear it looks like Gene Simmons.
Maybe.
I mean, because I keep seeing this guy's face, I'm like, that guy wants to slam my balls in the door. We'd drop this whole lawsuit right now if you just let me slam your balls in this door.
Man, I don't think I've ever seen George Clooney with hair like that.
Really?
I thought he was born with gray hair.
No, I mean, yeah. Looks like he's got a little bit of mud chop thing going on here, too.
A little bit, yeah. It's not a bad look for him.
No, not at all.
I'm just, like, super used to him looking the way he's always looked.
I mean, he's got a great look, too.
He does.
But anyway, so, but I will say, though, in defense of children, right? In defense of children, that there's also the opposite side of that is when a kid gets a little taste of importance.
Yeah.
And then they become insufferable.
Right.
And that's when you just want to just...
just punt them.
Because when, you know, you can intimidate a kid, they're a regular kid, right?
Oh,
you,
yeah,
can,
yeah.
You can skim, you can timid. But when they have a little bit of like, ooh, like, I think I'm somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, you could grab them and hang them off, like, off the side of a building. And be like, I'm going to drop you. Like, no, you wouldn't. And everything. And it's like, you would do that because, you know, like, yeah, I make you too much money. I do this, or I'm too lovable. And I'm like, oh man. Oh man. Like, I'd love to drop you, but then you wouldn't learn a lesson because you'd just be dead, right? But, oh man, at this point, I don't really want you to be right, but.
It seemed to help Vanilla Ice, but.
No, that's true. Poor Tupac.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I would rather see a kid become insufferable from, like, you know, like, being a talented actor as opposed to, like, being just a little shit like Cash Me Outside Girl.
Yeah, that's very true. I can agree with that, but like,
because like even if a kid's a total dick, like if you're a super talented actor, then it's kind of warranted.
You know what it makes me think of though, and I know it's been a while since you've seen this, so you're probably not gonna. Well, you probably will. This is a pretty memorable scene. And this kid was, if I remember, he was an actor in a lot of stuff, but the obnoxious asshole kid from. Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And he's like, you ready? Ready? And he goes, I was ready 2 hours ago. And he goes, I've been ready this whole time. I was born ready. And he's like, roll. like that. That's, I'm like, oh yeah, my goodness. Yeah. Like, you just can't wait. But like, yeah, dude, you're ruling the roost right now. But like, in 2 years, no one is gonna, like, I can read you off a list of names of actors who just disappeared after a certain point. Right, but you'd be like, I don't know any of those people. And I'd be like, exactly. Nobody knows any of these people. They're all gone.
Do you remember the kid cop on Community? Who's in that one episode?
Yeah. When Chang took over?
Was it when Chang took over? Because I thought it was the Ass Crack Bandit one. Maybe.
Because Chang had a bunch of, like, kid cops working for him.
Yeah, no, it was the kid who was actually, like, on the police force.
Okay, because they, at the end of the episode, he's, like, in a car with
the police. Yeah, they're doing the buddy cop thing with the listening device. Yeah. And the cop's like, yeah, you're a jaded son of a bitch, I'll give you that. Yeah, that kid was pretty good.
Well, like, okay, so, like, your boy,
Finn Wolfhard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were like, you were all about Finn Wolfhard, and then you were like, you saw him in something that wasn't,
Then he got too old for me, man. Yeah.
Dude, I was right. That is Gene Simmons, man.
Shit.
I mean, he's got that, like, oh, geez, I was gonna say something really racist, but people would take it as the wrong way racist.
No, go for it.
He's got that, like, almost black Jewish hair. You know, like, I mean, like.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were going with it, and it's okay, because mom actually took a 23andMe test. I learned I'm, like, 3% Ashkenazi Jew, so. Ashkenazi.
What the hell is that?
It's a kind of Jew, man. I don't know. But I'm allowed to say Jew now, so.
Oh. No, I think you converted just for the jokes.
Yeah, no, that was the part of mom reading off like the DNA test results, where I'm like, uh-oh.
wait, so you actually did like a 23andMe thing?
She did. So like, it would be a little bit different for me because, you know, that's only like her side of the family. But yeah, it's like, on mom's side of the family, it's like 86% English, which I knew that would be the case. Like, we're some English motherfuckers. And then it was like a fair portion of Eastern European, which, you know, that would explain our appeal to the Polish market.
Okay, yeah.
And then 3% Ashkenazi Jew.
So how long did she do this?
The results just came in last week.
Oh. Cause I heard that they're like bankrupt and shit. Like,
it wasn't specifically 23andMe. It was just one of those, oh, okay. One of those DNA heritage test websites. But yeah, it wasn't specifically 23andMe.
Now they got our shit on file, man.
Right?
Oh, okay.
So, okay, the government already knows everything about us. But yeah, so I feel kind of justified in all my Jewish jokes now.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
So I was only born into it for the jokes.
Oh, interesting. All right. So, yeah, some member of my family did something like that and everything. And I completely misunderstood when they were like, oh, yeah, like she did, because I thought they said 23 in me, and I was like, well, yeah, it makes sense, because she's a big ass whore. And he was like, no, it's 23. I was like, oh. And even thing, I was like, hey, 23 minutes, yes, it makes sense, because she's a big ass whore. And, but then I finally got what it, you know, what it was, and I was like, you know, it's like, that's still not gonna help her find out who the father of her baby is, because she's a big ass whore. So, anyway, I will say that, and this is not really a comfort at all, but I will say that it's somewhat of a comfort to know that it's not just that this is a haven for child predators. It's like the people in Hollywood, the higher ups, you know, the people in charge are just predators all around. It doesn't matter. Like, they're like, it doesn't matter if you're a kid, if you're male, if you're female, if you're like, whatever it is. Like, you know, if I've got hold over you, and this is something that you want to do, or something that the people around you want you to do, right? Then, like, I'm going to take advantage of that, and I'm going to make things difficult for you because I can. You know, right, it's right. Like, and it's like, that's horrible. It's horrible. But the thing is, at least, you know, it's not like everybody else is on the level. Except for these guys right here, that just waiting in like a big circle of like of PDs, you know, CPs are just waiting, you know, for that. It's right, like no, they're all horrible. It's like, I don't really have a predilection for anything except for people that want what I have,
right?
And will allow me to abuse them.
Like, it's like it. With the Venn diagram of like Hollywood versus. Like pedophiles, there's a lot of like similarities in there, because it's like, well, it's a very predatory business. It's the kind of thing for like directors and producers and stuff are often very, very driven by power, which of course is a huge motivating factor in child predators and rapists in general. You've got the whole thing with, narcissism. Like, there's very, very many producers in Hollywood are considered very narcissistic, and it's a very common, like, personality profile in child predators. It's just, there's a lot of overlap with it.
Yeah. And I will say one thing is, the parents that make their claim is like, you know, well, this is what you wanted to do. You were so adamant about it. You saw it say all the time. And so I took you to think like, okay, well, remember when I said that, you know, when I grew up, I want to be a dog, and you kept telling me I couldn't be, right? Just start running around like in my underwear in the backyard, and that you weren't going to serve me my food in a dish on the floor because I'm not a dog. Like, stop doing that. I'd be like, okay, so I was really adamant about that.
Right.
But, you know, but you told me no. So, I mean, at what point?
Remember when I told you I wanted Oreos for dinner and I wanted to stay up all night?
Right. So at what point did you think that I was, you know, like, mature, responsible enough to be able to say, I want to be an actor and be in, like, the entertainment industry, but not mature enough to say that I could not grow up to be a dog.
Right.
I mean, like, I'm like, wait, what? So, or, you know, when I don't want to take baths anymore, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the whole reason that we have consent laws, because children do not have the brain capacity to make an informed decision.
Right.
So, yes, if you say, do you want to be in the movies? The kid's going to go, uh-huh. And then you say, we're at the zoo. Do you want to climb into the enclosure with the gorillas? They're going to go, uh-huh.
Exactly.
And, like, yeah, like,
you know, the best place to hide is in this old refrigerator. Okay. Okay. Like, yeah.
I mean, like, that, it's such a null argument for the parents who do that. I thought you wanted it. Well, like, okay,
like the easy shit that I could have done, like, he's like, you know, eating Oreos for dinner. Right. Like, you wouldn't let me do that. You know, that didn't require you to get up at like 5:30 in the morning and drive me 2 hours away.
Right.
You know,
right.
To sit in, like, you know, in this cattle call of like 200 other kids and everything, pinching my cheeks so they're nice and rosy. And like, and then drive me like, and then, you know, drive me 2 hours back home and everything, saying, well, you know, I don't think you did very well, so you're not going to get a happy meal. Like,
you disappointed me. Yeah. It's like, meanwhile, I remember when my oldest nephew was 8 years old, I convinced him that there were pirates who lived in the woods across from our house. He was fucking terrified of them. You know why? Because kids are really easy to manipulate.
Right. I mean, hell, I was in high school, and and there was a movie filming and they needed extras, and I couldn't go be an extra because black people weren't allowed in public during the time they were filming that movie, so they had no black extras. And I was a teenager, and that happened. And so...
Oh, no, I remember that story. Holy yeah. fuck, yeah.
The movie you I watched over and over and over again. I didn't and like, never noticed that there were no black people in it, too. Which kind of makes our friendship a little strained.
Yeah. I didn't willingly watch it. My family subjected me to it.
Yeah, I remember. You got that racial blindness. Like, I see everybody as black people. Yeah, I saw police beating up with guys like, oh, this black-on-black crime's got to stop.
All right there, folks, that was Our Moms Think We're Funny. Let's give them a hand.